the American Revolution Podcast. This is Episode 6, The Quartering and Townshend Acts. So we talked last week about the Stamp Act and the Stamp Act Congress. The Stamp Act, of course, was the British tax on all documents that had to have a particular stamp on them, such as legal documents, papers, so on and so forth. We also talked about the Stamp Act Congress. The Congress itself was a really good first attempt by the American government, or the American colonies, to form their own government to react to issues happening in the British Parliament. Now, as we talked about, though the Stamp Act Congress, in theory, was a great thing, it was completely useless in stopping the Stamp Act. What actually stops the Stamp Act is the rioters threatening the Stamp Act commissioners, burning effigies of them, looting their homes, or just threatening them straight to their faces. So that when the Stamp Act is to take effect, November 1st, 1765, by that point, there's no Stamp Act commissioners left in the American colonies. They've all resigned for fear of being tar and feathered. So this week, we're going to talk about the next great attempt of the British Parliament to enforce some tax laws on the American colonies. And the first one came not too long after the implementation, or I should say the attempted implementation of the Stamp Act, and that is the Quartering Act. Passed March 24th, 1765, the Quartering Act outlines locations and conditions in which British soldiers are to find room and board in the American colonies. The Act required the colonists to house British soldiers in barracks that were to be provided by the colonies. If the barracks, though, turned out to be too small, then they had to be accommodated in local inns, ale and wine houses, stables. If they ran out of those, then they were to be put into barns, public houses, outhouses. I hope the ones that aren't used as potties, because that would be gross. Abandoned houses. Now, it is the popular belief that the Redcoats came in and just started tossing colonists out of their homes. This is purely a fable. It never happened. In many cities like New York and Boston, being told you had to make accommodation for Redcoats, that didn't go over so well. So in 1767, Parliament had to pass the Restraining Act. It's part of the Townshend Act, and it kept the Royal Governor of New York from signing any new legislation until they complied with the Quartering Act. In Boston, British soldiers were barely holding control of the island, so they chose to occupy public houses and to pitch their tents in Boston Common because they felt safer and confined areas. The idea of kicking people out of their homes in the hornet's nest that was Boston City, that was a dangerous proposition. They also never ventured past the Neck. It's that narrow strip of land between the two rivers that dump into Boston Harbor. It was a good choke point that the British soldiers could protect, keeping their soldiers in and any angry colonists out pretty effectively. And as we're going to talk about in next week's episode, there is a little event that's going to take place that's going to make sure that the British soldiers will never want to leave the island because there are just too many angry colonists on the outside. So, as I said, the Quartering Act didn't toss people out of their homes. It just set outlines for British soldiers that could stay in certain areas if the barracks that were supposed to be provided by the American colonies were too small. The Quartering Act isn't a hot-button issue for the Sons of Liberty like some previous and future acts will be. But it is interesting to note there is a little bit of American propaganda at this time that talks about the Quartering Act as an act of Parliament that is used to remove American colonists from their home and allow British soldiers to stay in. You know, I mentioned last week about the Sons of Liberty television special from the History Channel. There is a moment in there that the Quartering Act kind of comes into play. It's when Thomas Gage goes into John Hancock's house and he tosses John Hancock out of his own house. I don't believe that ever happened. Now, the act does say abandon homes, so if any patriots abandon their homes, well, those were within every right of the British soldiers to occupy. So though it's not the hot-button issue that a lot of people would like, it is an interesting side note to, or little footnote in the history books that has to be talked about. After the Quartering Act, British Parliament will take about a year and a half off. This little reprieve will dim the fires from the Sons of Liberty. But in June to July 1767, the Townshend Acts are implemented by British Parliament, and those fires are reignited. Now, the Townshend Acts are not a singular act, but more of a series of acts that are passed between June 15th and July 2nd, 1767. They're implemented by Charles Townshend, i.e., the Townshend Acts. They were used to exert dominance over the American colonies. They're just sick and tired of these patriots telling them that they can't tax them and we're not going to listen to you when you do. So the British Parliament does the one thing that they can do. Create more taxes and more acts that will restrain the patriots and kind of try and stamp out these fires that they've all started. Well, it kind of works against them. First was the aforementioned Restraining Act, the suspension of the American governor in New York from signing any new legislation until New York had complied with the Quartering Act. The second part became known as the Townshend Duties. This was a direct duty on lead, glass, paper, paint, and tea. A duty is the same thing as a tax, where they take a percentage of that money that you pay to import those items, and that money goes directly to the British Treasury. It goes nowhere else. It goes only into the British Treasury. So the American colonists are getting that tax, and they say, hey, what the heck is this? The easiest way to explain it is it's like that portion of your paycheck that you see, oh, this is for healthcare, this is for Social Security, this is for the state, this is for the federal, and this is for, what the heck is this for? You never know, and for some reason, no one can ever tell you the answer to that. So the British colonists are like, whoa, 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 whoa. You're taxing us just so you can put money in the treasury. Because that sounds very fair. The third act called for additional customs officers, searchers, spies, Coast Guard vessels, search warrants, and a board of customs commissioners at Boston. This act is very cut and dry. All it is doing is calling for additional workers in and around the ports to make sure that the Patriots aren't trying any funny business, running some sort of black market, importing things illegally, so on and so forth. And the fourth act in the Townshend Acts was a lift on commercial duties on tea, so that tea can be exported for free without British taxes. Britain was exporting the tea and not paying any taxes on it. It was on the importation tax that we'll see the tea tax become a big issue, and the colonists will get so annoyed with it that they'll throw themselves a little party in the coming years. Now, it wasn't a singular act that caused problems with the Townshend Acts. What it really was another example of taxation without representation. These acts were resisted everywhere with verbal agitation and violence. There was outspoken defiance along with the evasion of the duties and non-importation agreements. The Patriots did so well at fighting the Townshend Acts that it saw a repeal of the acts on March 5th, 1770. For those who know their history, this is a perfect lead-in to next week's episode, which is the Boston Massacre. The only duty that isn't removed is the one that's on tea,
the Quartering Act itself, and the troops that were stationed in Boston. Now, this wasn't a fix, but it tempered hostilities, because as we're going to learn about next week, March 5th, 1770, is a day where they really need to temper hostilities in Boston. Now, I cut this episode a little short this week. It isn't my usual brand of long-winded talking, because I have some excellent news. Number one, the Facebook is officially up and running. Now, for some people who personally know me, I've already sent people some links to it, and I've got a few likes, and that's great. But now, for those people who aren't friends with me on Facebook, or are just not paying attention, and you're listening, well, Facebook is up and running. I've already put some pictures up. First was, of course, some from the Army Camp weekend that I talked about a few weeks ago. That was a lot of fun. We had a great time. And I just want to give another shout out to the official park of the American Revolution podcast, and that is Saratoga National Historical Park. Also, I just put some up recently of my recent business trip to Boston. I was there on business this past weekend, had a great time, got to see a few of the popular areas inside Boston, Faneuil Hall, the old State House, the old Meeting House, and for next week, the actual site where the Boston Massacre happened. So that leads me into talking about next week's episode. Next week's episode is the Boston Massacre. We're going to cover it from the beginning into the trials of the soldiers who shot 5 innocent civilians, and most importantly, a young lawyer from Boston who will stand up and, to try and temper the hostilities, will defend. Yes, that's why I said defend the British soldiers. Now, to leave you guys with a recommendation this week, I am not doing a media one. Again, I'm going to actually hold off on those for a little while. Now I'm going to go full on into books. And the book that I'm going to recommend this week is The American Revolution, A Visual History. It's put out by the Smithsonian, and it's one of those big tabletop books that you put on your coffee table, and they're kind of a talking point. So while they're not a sit-down and read chapter-by-chapter type book, they have a lot of information, great pictures and paintings, and most importantly, a good visual timeline of the American Revolution. What a lot of people don't realize with these types of books is that they're more so a encyclopedia that is dedicated to one topic, so that they can expand on the topics a little more than you would find in your basic, you know, Britannica encyclopedia. So that'll do it for this week. Till next week, this was the American Revolution Podcast. And always remember, keep your powder dry.